coming up on this episode of the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise podcast.
But to the point of my dad, you know, having this degree, you know, I did see him graduating with these degrees. And it was throwing me off because I never saw him doing the work. And so that meant that today, that means a lot to me because it meant that he was doing that work whenever the time permitted.
Welcome to the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise podcast with Dr. William T. Choctaw, MD, JD, where the doctor helps you unlock your full potential by equipping you with tools and knowledge in the areas of health, wealth, and wisdom, anchored in his experience as a business executive, a physician surveyor for the Joint Commission, a former mayor, and over 50 years of experience as a general surgeon. You've got questions, he's got answers. So let's get started. Here's Dr. William T. Choctaw, MD, JD.
So welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We have a very special guest with us today for the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise podcast. We're always delighted to have new and exciting individuals to sort of give us some examples and some advice about life and to teach us about what some of the things that they have learned. And so we're very fortunate to have the youth minister at St. Stephen's Missionary Baptist Church, Reverend Francis, and he's gonna talk with us and share some of his knowledge and experience with us. Welcome, Reverend Francis.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for that illustrious introduction.
Oh, that's fine. And also with us is our professional, Brother Jesse Hammonds. We call him the podcast professor, but he will also be involved in addition to making sure that all the sound and everything works well. And he will also maybe ask a few questions should he choose to. So, Reverend Francis, why don't you tell us about yourself?
As you mentioned, I am the minister to children, youth, and young adults at St. Stephen Baptist Church in the city of La Puente. I'm a native of Los Angeles, California, raised. I graduated from California Baptist University with a degree, a bachelor's degree in applied theology, and Gateway Seminary. I finished up with a master's in theological studies. Specifically with a concentration in biblical studies. Mm-hmm. And I've been a youth minister at St. Stephen for, since about 2017 or 2018 or so. And I'm just glad to be here, glad to be able to share the gifts and the talents that God's given me with the people of the church.
Excellent. Thank you. One of the things that we try to emphasize, particularly on this program, is the importance of the youth, that importance of the youth really are our future. I remember, I think it was in one of our Sunday school classes, and we were talking about the things in the world and all that sort of stuff. And I think I made a comment to somebody, I'm not really worried about that because I have grandchildren. And when I'm long gone, the grandchildren will take over, and they'll handle stuff. They'll handle whatever they need to handle. What is it that makes you either positive or negative about the future of mankind? I know that's a pretty broad question, but what are some of your thoughts about that?
I think there's there's a lot of negativity in the world. There's a lot of turmoil. Uh-huh. There's a lot of war. There's a lot of confusion. There are a lot of broken relationships. Nevertheless, there's hope. And I know it's easy for us to get kind of caught up in those different things that, you know, that we mentioned when we talk about the negativity, because it's so heavily emphasized. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I got older, maybe in my mid-20s, when I realized the value of the statement, misery loves company.
Yes.
Misery really does love company. And, you know, they say opposites attract. Well, sometimes they don't attract. Sometimes misery loves company.
Right.
And people are miserable. Oftentimes, they'll do anything they can to make you miserable along with them. And so if we focus on the positive things, and if we focus on the things that make us better, the things that we have in common with each other, treating our neighbors as ourselves, you know, loving people the way that we want to be loved, I think that the future is bright. If we learn how to harness technology for good and not for evil, especially with the rise of AI, other, you know, automated generated technology, I think that we're in a good place. But, you know, that's yet to be seen. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I think, like you said, you know, the grandchildren, the great grandchildren, if we raise them up in the way that we want them to go and train them up in the way that God would have them to go, it's my belief that there's still yet hope for the future.
You know, I completely agree with you on that. I try to tell my patients, particularly when I was practicing full time, to surround yourself with positive people. You know, and I would say, I said, those negative people, you want to stay away from them. You can wave at them and wish them well, but you don't want to hang out with them. You know, I said, because they will bring you, or at least try to bring you to their level. And we're all human. And so much of it does depend on what our attitude is. It's what we think that really is true. You know, we talk about basic principles, and I made the comment, I don't have any more bad days. I used to have bad days, but I decided about 20, 30 years ago that I'd had enough bad days and I didn't want any more. So now I only have good days or great days, because I figured out that my day was good or bad if I say it is.
Right.
It's only if what my attitude is what dictates how I feel. So I completely agree with you in terms of your perspective on that. So as youth minister, what are some of the challenges and what are some of the rewards?
Some of the challenges, I think, come along with being relevant.
Okay.
And by being relevant, I don't mean conforming as much as I mean understanding. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding that comes along with authority over youth. And so I try to understand. I try to kind of remember where I was at that time in my life, as opposed to lecturing. I try to have compassion and try to put myself back at that time and say, okay, well, I remember it was a wild time. It was a crazy time. And then even incorporating, and this is what I mean by being relevant, incorporating the struggles that they have today, such as social media. When I was in high school, social media was like the party line. If anybody from LA is in on the podcast, you may know about the party line. And so it was like, that was social media, but you didn't need to have full access to people the way that you do now with different forms of social media. And so understanding that these kids have different mental health struggles connected to the social media, connected to the effects of bullying, connected to LGBTQ issues, connected to racial issues. Things that we didn't necessarily have on the radar 15 or 20 years ago. So incorporating all of that into the approach of understanding them and trying to help them to grow from that point, as opposed to, you know, the indoctrination, the full indoctrination model.
You know, you're exactly right. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize, and we mentioned this in one of our previous podcasts, let's say a teenager's brain is not as developed as a 25-year-old's brain.
Right.
Just physically, it's just not there yet. Now, it will get there. But my point is that in society and more is sort of put on that 16-year-old brain, he or she don't understand things the way a 25 or 26-year-old does. And so a lot of times as parents and as adults, you know, we push them and do this and do that, do whatever. But they're trying to catch up and process all of that. So when they act differently, they don't act like the 25-year-olds because they aren't 25-year-olds. We sometimes then get on them harder than we should. And I remember when I was 16, which is way long time ago, but there were some of the same issues. They may have had different names, but it was the same types of relationships. And my point is, I guess, I think we do need to be a bit more tolerant and patient of our teenagers and of our young people, but physically recognize that they just aren't there mentally yet. It's going to take some time, just like it took us some time to get there. What would relevance look like to you as a youth pastor?
One thing I can think of off the top of my head is attire.
Okay.
I'm not a big suit guy anyway. Now, I don't mind wearing a suit because I don't want to brag, but I feel like I look kind of good when I got a suit on. I don't mind wearing a suit, but every Sunday, even the culture of America, even the work culture of America, the attire of the work culture has changed as well. And so coming to St. Stephen with the suit on every Sunday is not the best way to connect with the youth. Maybe I need to dress more, with my Rams hoodie on and, not necessarily getting too far out of line, right? But still having boundaries that say you can be yourself in the house of God with respect to the house of God. And so, I think there's a compromise that can be made in certain areas without, compromising the truth of who God is or the holiness of the sanctuary.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating you brought up this subject. Can I give you a little pushback on that? Can I do that? Okay, when some of us, and when I say some of us, I'm gonna say baby boomers. We're those 60, 70, 80-year-old people. Those people. We were taught that you respect the house of God, to your point. And that the way you respect the house of God is how you dress. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to wear a suit because you may not have a suit. I didn't have a suit when I was, but you wear your best BEST clothes to church. You wear, your other clothes to school and to blah, 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 blah. But your best clothes you wore to church. And if you had a suit, that probably would have included a suit type thing. So my point is that folks who sort of grow up with that, 10, 20, 30, 40 years of age, and then you see somebody come in with flip-flops, and I'm just exaggerating now. But my point is, I think you're right. I'm not disagreeing with you. But I think that there are different perspectives, and I think all of us basically, there's one God. And I think God understands all of that. I think that, my God does. When I talk to him every day, he doesn't say, well, what kind of clothes are you wearing today? Real quickly, I can tell you, and I've mentioned this in my Sunday school class, I have two sons. And when they were teenagers, both went to Nogales, graduated from Nogales High School. And they grew up in St. Stephen's. I had a conversation with them because they did not, and you'll appreciate this, they did not want to wear a tie. We weren't talking about suits. We were talking about a tie to St. Stephen's. And I was having a fit. And I said, no. You aren't going to go into church and not wear a tie. You're going to respect God's house. Blah, blah. I went through my whole stuff. And they just thought that was silly. They said, well, what difference does it make if I wear a tie or not? And I didn't get to the point where I pulled the whole thing of, well, I am your father and you will do what I say. I didn't go that far. But I said, okay. And I sort of thought about it. And then I said, you know what? What's the most important thing here? Is it that they wear a tie or is it they go to church? And I sort of concluded that the most important thing was that they go to church. And so I learned some, this is, oh God, 10, 15 years ago. I learned something from that. But what I did was I went back and I apologized to them. I said, you know what? Your dad was wrong. I said, you were right. It doesn't matter, blah, 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 blah. And so I learned how to be, I think, a better parent because I made a mistake and they taught me that. But it just shows that, to your point, that the youth many times are not where their parents are. And that's not a big revelation. But we do have to listen to them. So I guess what I would say, as long as there's balance,
Well,
you can stream one way or the other.
can I suggest also? Well, let me commend you first on something that you said that stood out to me is that you went back and you apologized because of what you perceived to be something that you needed to apologize for. A lot of parents won't do that, and that drives away. Like, we're all human beings, right? We all deserve to be respected, whether you're a child, whether you're a parent, maybe in different ways, maybe to different degrees. But we all deserve basic human respect because we're all created in the image of the Most High God. And another thing, I would also, I was thinking, why do people have the attitude that we need to be dressed in the Sunday's best and so on and so forth. Well, one reason, of course, is because of the former mechanized or agrarian society. And so you would always be dressed in work clothes every day. And so there was a necessity to dress yourself better, or not just a necessity, but even a desire to look better when you came into the church than when you were out in the field or when you're out at the factory or whatever the case may be. And then it was also, I would suggest, a symbol of, what do I want to call it? You know, in the context of the African-American church, I could say that, you know, it made you feel like somebody. Right. You when you come to the church and you're a deacon, you're not boy like right. You're on the street. Absolutely. You're not the janitor, or you're not the right. bus driver. Now you're the pastor. Now. And so, you know, even from that perspective, you know, there's an idea that the pastor needs to be dressed. The pastor needs to be looking better than, you know, the rest of the people. And sometimes, you know, not to get into that conversation, but sometimes that can get out of hand. Right. But. So the main point, you know, we have to meet these people where they are. We say it all the time in the church. We got to meet people where they are. Well, we got to meet young people where they are, too. And if they want to come to church with some Jordans on, that is not, you know, going to be the defining factor in whether or not they get salvation.
Class is in session. Hey there. Podcast Professor here, encouraging you to let your voice and your thoughts be heard, because you matter and what you say matters. Now, you might be thinking, Professor, now that all sounds good, but how do I do that? Well, I can help you with that. Just go to thwwp.com and click on the Podcast Professor button for more information. And that's it. Okay? Class dismissed. Now back to the episode in progress.
So they were George.
Let me just add one other component with that.
Okay.
Well, one of the other things that we were taught when I was your age and younger is that you dress for the job that you want. Mm-hmm. You dress for the job that you want. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the field and factory. There's another whole area of work called professionalism.
Correct.
Doctors, lawyers, mm-hmm. Professors in college, business owners, blah, 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 blah. I see one of the things that stresses me to some extent when I see young people with tattoos on their necks, on their face, because they will not get a job, I don't believe, in certain areas with that look. You know, it just won't fit. So that's another factor. And one of the things I think a lot of the parents try to say is don't close the door to potential opportunities, because when you were 16, you went through a phase and decided to do X, Y, Z. You know, and I can tell you those tattoos don't come off very easily. And they have a lot of scars.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I totally agree. And I encourage young people to think along those lines as well. Like, you know, you can have an identity or a personality, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, go overboard, because like you said, you might just be experimenting through a phase, or you might just be going through right. something, and now you got this thing tatted over your face. And like you thought it was in Chinese. This has happened before. You thought it was in Chinese. You thought it was strength. And it says, I'm a clown. And now you go, I'm a clown tattoo on your face in Chinese, and you wonder why all the Chinese people laugh at you, but you
right.
communicate with them. So, you know, yeah, I completely agree to the point of professionalism. I do encourage young people to keep a professional demeanor about themselves, to dress for the job, of course, in the professional sector, to dress professionally, and in the church as well. When it's time to get dressed, get dressed. Mm-hmm. When it's time to wear a sweatsuit, you can wear a sweatsuit. When it's Super Bowl Sunday and everybody's wearing a jersey, you wear your jersey. Well, you know, it's okay.
Well, I think our church does a very good job of balancing that. I think Pastor Dockery, in terms of encouraging people to be themselves and express themselves in their dress a certain way. And I guess that's the way I conclude, is that there shouldn't be judgment on either side. There shouldn't be judgment on either side, you know, whether you wear a sweatsuit or a suit with a tie.
Be respectful of the environment.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
And I think
back in the day, I may have heard him throw a couple hints out there. Certain people dressing. I think he mentioned, you know, the guy with the low cut shirt with the chest hairs popping out and stuff.
Right.
So, like, you know, dress appropriately for the environment. I think that's a good place to land with that.
I agree. See, I had no idea we were going to get into this.
I told you. I always can't learn every time.
But it was one of the things that Jess and I always said is that God is really in charge. You know, we just jump out there and we don't know which way things are going to go, but we just go with it. But thank you for your patience. Thank you for even bringing it up. I think that's therapeutic. So what else have you learned, or what do you try to convey to the people, the young people that you teach, to help them to balance life and that sort of thing? You know, you have a bachelor's and a master's degree, and obviously you felt that having a bachelor's and a master's degree were important. How do you encourage other young people to get their bachelor's and master's degrees moving up, moving forward?
I think example goes a long way.
Yeah.
You know, just saying, being able to say, I have it, and to point to it and to let them see the process or even the results of it. I was thinking about it on the way here to my office just now. My dad has a doctorate of ministry degree.
Yes.
And I didn't have any intention on going to college like that. I wanted to go to the Marines and travel around the world and chase women and stuff like that. That was my plan. That was the original. Let me just be
real. That's not uncommon.
Yeah, let me just be real. I said, I'm going to get buff. I'm going to have on the uniform. They're just going to be flocking in. And, you know, I'm going to just be getting paid for this, right?
Uh-huh.
It didn't play out like that. But to the point of my dad, you know, having this degree, you know, I did see him graduating with these degrees. And mm-hmm. It was throwing me off because I never saw him doing the work. And so that means a lot to me, because it meant that he was doing that work whenever the time permitted, you know.
Yes.
Like, he was getting the work done, and he was.
And that's difficult. It is not easy to get a doctorate degree in any subject.
Right.
That's difficult.
Right. And then on top of that, there were mentors that he had who had done the same thing in a time mm-hmm. where this was kind of like almost unheard of, right?
Yes.
For a Black preacher,
yes.
Doctorate degree in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, right? These guys were from a different generation where there was a lot more working against them than for them.
And so yes.
For them to have succeeded and then to tell my dad, you need to go get it. And then my dad went and got it because of, you know, the footsteps that were laid out ahead of him. And so for it to come full circle by God's grace and full design, trust me, right? To kind of like be able to fill those shoes, I understand, man, this is not easy. Raising kids, oh man, going to work, driving, getting gas, putting food on the table, talking to people, walking with people, doing the work, reading the book. I mean, the books.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're a doctor and a lawyer. the books, I can only imagine, you know, the kind of things that you've had to read based on the things that I've had to read and been responsible for knowing. And like, I where does it go? It's like my mind is just... Listen to me right now. You know, you can tell.
You know, and your dad, I know your dad. I have a lot of respect for him. He's in my Sunday school class. The other thing is that he was not encouraged always to do what he to get that doctorate degree. I guarantee you, and I've never asked him this, but I get, because he and I are the same generation. We're all baby boomers. That people told him, what are you doing? Who do you think you are? Well, why do you think you should get it? You need to go out there and get a job, you know, doing X, Y, and Z.
That's all you need is the spirit.
Right. You know, you aren't a blah, blah, blah. Why do you think you're smart enough to be blah, 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 blah? So my point is, it's even harder than you think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had to fight against that. He had to pray about it. He had to continuously tell himself, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. This is important because, you know, I'm going to pass this on, whether it's to my son or my daughter, whatever. And so my point is that generation, our generation, went through all that. And we sometimes worry, will that be lost with those who come after us? You know, will they just sort of, you know, be sent in opposite directions? Will they fall for the shiny objects? You know, because there are a lot of shiny objects out there. And, you know, things that they think are easy, but they're never easy. It's always harder than you think. And I think your father's an excellent example of that. He's a man of honor and distinction who went to the military and got a doctorate degree. You know how hard that is? It's huge.
And again, to your point about generations, you know, his parents had no more than an elementary school degree.
Yes.
They lived, I talked about it before, they lived on a street that in my lifetime was a dirt road.
Yes.
Across, directly across the street from a cemetery. And it's a city where, you know, the black folks are buried in one cemetery and the white folks are buried even now.
You're describing my neighborhood in Nashville. Right. I grew up in Nashville. I had a dirt road, same thing.
Exactly. So it's like I was there to witness some of this stuff. And so I'm able to tell my kids, like, you know what? I remember seeing the water tower out there with that red light flashing on and off. We don't have that in LA, right? We don't have a water tower. They don't understand that. They don't understand a dirt road. They don't understand ant hills. You know, they don't understand any of that kind of stuff. They don't understand having to, you know, leave from a place to grow into the person that God wants you to be. And so those are the things, seeing people like my dad, seeing people like yourself who have come from that background and said, education is the key to success. Yes. And then getting that education. I think one thing as well is financial education is sorely lacking in our generation. And so that has a lot to do with how you're able to matriculate in your own academics. There are a lot of factors, I think, but to the original question, it takes a village. It takes a village to encourage young people. It takes a village to make opportunities for young people. It takes opportunities to make more opportunities for young people. And so as long as my dad made an opportunity for me, I have the example to make an opportunity for somebody else and to pass down that mindset that they need to be making an opportunity for the person that comes behind them in that time. And so we're building a foundation of opportunity here at St. Stephen by working with these young people in that mindset.
That makes perfect sense. And I can guarantee you, and I've not talked to your father about this, but I bet he'd agree with me. We were taught, and we still believe, and we teach our children that opportunity is based on education. Mm-hmm. You can talk all that other stuff, blah, blah, blah. You can get the fancy car and the nice job, whatever. It will go away unless you own the company. If you get an education, you own the company. You're the president. And so I would say, that, you know, young people, why do you want to work with somebody? You want to be the boss. You want to own the company. How do you own the company? You own the company by getting a degree. That's how you own the company. And I can remember you mentioned about me being a doctor. I'm a doctor, and I've told this story. I even did a podcast about it. My mother, who was a 17-year-old high school dropout when she got pregnant with me, was not able to finish high school because she got pregnant. But as soon as I can remember, I was 5, she told me that I would be a doctor, that she wanted me to be a doctor. Now, I didn't know what a doctor was. We didn't grow up. There was no doctor we went to in my neighborhood. We went to the lady down the street when we got sick and she did something. We felt better. right. Castor oil and everything. But it worked. But my point is, she recognized that even though she was kicked out of school, you know, and on and on and on and was isolated, she put that into her son. You will go to medical school. You will become a doctor, blah, 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 blah. And here I am. So my point very simply is, if you put it into your kids, they can do it. They will do it. But we have to be focused on doing it. There's only one key. All the other stuff are shiny objects. Yeah, you can get the job, but it'll be gone in 6 months or a year or 2 years, you know. And as long as you're working for somebody else, that's going to be an issue. You want to own the company. You want to be the president. You want to be the chairman of the board. That if you shoot for it, you can get it. If you settle, then you'll be stuck, basically. And that's what our teachers used to push that on us. Because remember, you know, you wouldn't have been able to go to Cal Baptist and Golden Gate Seminary before 1964. You know, because that's when the Civil Rights Act was passed. class that opened up these colleges to us. We had to go. That's why you got historical black colleges and universities, HBCUs. We couldn't get into the white schools, except for a few of us, you know, but all that changed. And so that opportunity cannot be wasted on a generation, because as you can tell, people are trying to turn back these clocks. They're trying to turn them back. And our only help is those kids like yourself with those bachelors and with those masters and with those doctorate degrees, because then we know that they'll be in charge and that hope will get us through.
I totally agree with that. And I would even suggest that to the mention of, you know, the clocks being turned back, that there is a structure in academic education that directs, you know, black people, people of color in general, into a certain track, a more
practical
track as opposed to
you bet. Right. Yes, sir. So yes, sir.
My encouragement to young people is to go into the academic track, because they're trying to keep you out of there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Myself, in no disrespect to the D-man, I want a PhD personally.
Absolutely.
I don't want to be restricted from being able to do the academic things that
got. Yes. Yes.
And so, you know, and that's just how it works specifically in the field of theology, is according to what I've been able to ascertain.
You, sir, you are right, 100% correct. When my sons were in high school, I would go when I could. Yeah, I'd get out of the hospital and I'd go to their teacher meetings and whatever. And I remember when my oldest son, Priest Choctaw, went to Nogales, graduated from Nogales, and they had a career day. And at the career day, you know, they had all the different schools represented, USC, Mount SAC, on and on and on and on and on. And they had the military represented also. But the professors there, or the teachers there, got up and they would introduce the UCLAs and the others. But when they introduced the junior college, she said something like, "Now this is where our students go." And I thought that was horrible, because what she was saying to them, this is what we expect. We don't expect you to get a master's degree. We expect you to go to blah, blah, blah and get that job, and that's it. And I think, you know, who do kids listen to? They listen to their parents and they listen to their teachers or their counselors. And I've always believed that the counselors, no disrespect to counselors, but I don't trust them. And I think a lot of them are ignorant. And I think a lot of them are prejudiced. And I think they look at you or me and say, no, you go to track B. You don't have to worry about track A. They'll say things like, why do you want to put in all that work? You know, you can get a good job at blah, 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 yeah. DRI or whatever. You know, you can get a good job at all this. What they don't tell you is they don't last. They don't last.
It's designed to do a service for a different class of people.
Exactly. And I said to people, remember, Trump University was not a university. It wasn't real. It had the name, the whole thing. And which I think was just horrible. You take the best and the brightest and give them this hope and then destroy it because they can't transfer those credits. They can't do anything with it. So I agree. We have to protect our young people, make sure they get good advice, and when they don't, correct it and move forward with it.
Right.
How do you, as a minister, how do you make sure or try to help young people have a good relationship with Christ? How do you encourage them to do that? It must be a challenge. And I'm just wondering how that works.
I mean, it's a challenge to do it for yourself, right?
It is. Continuously.
One thing that I do that, you know, it is what it is. I just tell it like it is, right? with respect.
And well, honesty is good.
I tell it like it is. I try to just keep it straight. Now, sure enough, you know, I have a master's degree. I have a bachelor's degree. I'm a youth minister and all these other great things. But, you know, in between the time that my dad was doing all those degrees and stuff, and, you know, a couple years, 2015, I was running the streets and I was acting a fool. Like, I was acting nut. Like, I was I believe that God allowed me to survive that. So yes. That I can come back and tell somebody
why he had something planned for you. Yes.
Right. And so it was like, you know, I've seen the church, right? And I'm able to harness those things, or to, you know, draw on those things that I learned in the church, the foundation of godliness and holiness and knowing who God is in my own life, and then going into these places where church folks don't go.
Right.
Right. And to experience them first person, you know, as a lived experience, and then to be called back out, but not forget where you came from.
Yes.
That goes a long way, because some of those kids are there. They're there where I'm come from. And so I can say, hey, you know, you're just at the front door of this place. I can stop you from going in the house because it's about to catch on fire. I don't want to get trapped in there.
Right.
There's only one way in and there's only one way out.
There you go.
And so if you go in this house, I'm telling you right now, the door's going to be locked and it's going to burn from the roof to the floor. You don't want to be there. And then, you know, some of them are more likely to listen to me because of my experience than McGruff. Right. You bring in a cartoon character and it's not real.
Right.
When Reverend Francis is like, man, I saw Reverend Francis. I remember I was in his Sunday school class when I was in ninth grade. And then he graduated from Cal Baptist. And then I was in 11th grade. And he graduated from Gateway. And he got ordained. And he's doing these other things. And then I'm telling them the whole time, you don't have to go through this middle part to get here.
Right.
Do the shortcut. That goes a long way. And so I try to do it with example. I try to do it with encouragement. I try to do it with scripture memorization. Presenting them the scriptures, you know, on a base level. Let's look at what the scriptures say. What does that sound like to you? What does it actually mean? Let's understand what we stand on, because when you send them out there on the football field, they know the plays. You send them to the basketball court, they know the plays. We send them out there to talk about God, they should know the plays, right?
Right.
We got a whole playbook. So it's like we have to let them know, where does this factor into your life today? So, you know, the Bible is real today. It speaks to us today. And so if we understand that, at our age, because we've seen it through our own experience, we can relay these testimonies back to these youth and these children and these young adults. And then we can even ask them, how did you see God do this in your life? And they have answers. Where did you see God do this? Oh, man, I was at school one day, blah, blah, blah. Or I prayed before my test. You can't take prayer out of school. I don't care what they say.
Oh, no.
I prayed my way through school. I'm going to tell you.
I did too.
Because prayer works. I can tell them, I prayed my way through school and it worked. I prayed my way through the county jail. I had to. There wasn't nobody there but me and God. You got to get through this. Prison. Yeah. You know, God brought me through prison. I didn't bring myself through it. I'm not an excessively big guy. You know, it had to be somebody bigger than me that was out here answering these prayers. And so, you know, to your point again about the society, it's a violent society. It's a society where people don't understand the value of life. And so we have to impart on these children, you know, the value of life. The value of life is determined by God. So what better place to learn about the value of life than at the church? We have to think, as a theologian, I think this way, right? I think about the structure of God in relation to man. And so that's how I try to apply, you know, my presentation of Christ to these young people. Who is Jesus to you? Who is he to me? Who is he to us as a church? What is the church? What is it here for? It's not just so, you know, your mama can drag you out of bed on Sunday and make you wake up early one more day of the week. This is a community. This is the body of Christ. This is the representation of the kingdom of God on earth, and you're a part of that. That's something to be excited about. That's something to be proud of. That's something to go out and share with somebody. So I hope that answers the question.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise podcast with Dr. William T. Choctaw, MD, JD. Be sure to check out other great episodes covering areas of health, wealth, and wisdom at thwwp.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the books, blogs, and other literature in your preferred format. And don't forget to leave a review, subscribe, share, and support the podcast. That's at thwwp.com. You've been listening to the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise podcast with Dr. William T. Choctaw, MD, JD.